Evidence and Answers begins right now.
You're tuned to Evidence and Answers radio broadcast with our host, Pat Zukeran. Pat is an author, teacher, and international speaker in the area of Christian apologetics, the defense of the Christian faith. In this episode, Dr. Joseph Holden and Dr. Pat Zukeran examine archaeological discoveries tied to Herod the Great, Pontius Pilate, and Caiaphas, from royal palaces to fortresses to inscriptions and burial remains. They show how archaeology confirms these figures as real historical actors in the gospel story. Today we will begin a two-part discussion with these historical figures. Now, on to our broadcast.
Joining me on the broadcast is Dr. Joseph Holden, author, pastor, and co-founder of Veritas International University, and Dr. Patrick Zukeran, author, pastor, and founder of Evidence and Answers, and a doctoral student at VIU School of Archaeology. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, great to be with you, Brian.
Delighted to be with you both.
Well, Joe, as you and Pat know, archaeology is one of Veritas International's strengths, with monumental discoveries under our belt. Of course, I'm referring to the work at Tell al-Hammam, but also our work at Shiloh. And when you add to the mix archaeological work here in the United States, and we find that Veritas is really one of the leading biblical archaeology universities in the world, and that's something we're really proud of. This said, we'll be using Dr. Holden and Dr. Geisler's book, The Popular Handbook of Archaeology and the Bible, as the foundation for this series. As we progress through the top biblical archaeological discoveries, we'll use four D's to guide our discussion. First, the discovery, what and where the item was found. Second, the description of the item, its physical characteristics and what it reveals. Third, its dwelling, the context and historical setting it is found in the Bible. And finally, its denotation, its significance, what it tells us about the Bible's reliability. Last week, we began our top 10 list with a big one, the Temple Mount. If you missed the broadcast, check it out. Today, we'll continue the top 10 biblical archaeology discoveries by turning our attention to the New Testament, looking at what archaeology reveals about Herod, Pilate, and Caiaphas. So, Joe, let's start with the first D, its discovery. And, of course, I threw out three names here, but give us some background history on these three men, Herod the Great, Pontius Pilate, and Caiaphas. And what discoveries have archaeologists unearthed concerning these three men?
Well, as we look at those three individuals' lives and as they appear in Scripture, many have come to refer to them as kind of a tripartite axis of evil, if you will, because of their opposition to Christ and his teaching and his ministry. But first of all, Herod the Great, I mean, he was born in the late 70s BC, and to an Idumean father who was a descendant of Esau. His name was Antipater, his father was. And his father was a favorite to the Romans. And so the Romans set him up in a ruling governorship of Judea by about 47 BC. Well, eventually, his father's favor would rub off on Herod the Great, and the Romans would give Herod the Great a Galilee region to rule. And he'd do a pretty good job up there in suppressing bandits and all these criminals. Rome said, hey, let's give him charge of Judea. And so they promoted him to governor of Judea, and he ruled there for about 33 years until about 4 BC. But when we talk about Herod the Great refers more to the master builder part of Herod. He built cities and named these cities after Roman emperors, such as Caesarea Maritima. Caesarea is the name for Caesar, and he named it after Claudius. He built the hippodrome there, the horse racings, the harbor there as well. He also named Samaria region Sebast, which is the Greek title for the Latin Augustus. So he was really in the pocket of the Roman Empire. He wanted to make good with them because that's where his power came from. But Herod also built fortresses. He built palaces. In fact, Masada is a 1,900-foot fortress palace overlooking the Dead Sea. And it is amazing views from up there. That's where his palace was in some sense. And then there's Machaerus on the east side of the Dead Sea as another palace he built. He also built a palace called the Herodium, and it was all kinds of great architecture. He was just gifted in that. He beautified the Temple Mount. He beautified the temple itself to gain favor with the Jewish religious authorities. And then you have these discoveries for Herod. Ehud Netzer was an amazing archaeologist that focused on Herod. He found his tomb at the Herodium. There was a wine jug that was found at Masada by Netzer. We have found Masada and Machaerus in the Herodium as well. Temple Mount and all the retaining walls have all the fingerprints of Herod on it. He was a bloodthirsty man, didn't have a good relationship with his family, but was there historically, and we have evidence of Herod the Great. Pontius Pilate, on the other hand, he was a Roman governor in Judea. He ruled for about 10 or 11 years, and then he was removed by Emperor Caligula in about 37 AD. He's probably one of the most well-known figures because he's featured prominently there in the trial of Jesus, and it's recorded in all four Gospels. So everybody knows who Pontius Pilate is, the Roman governor of Judea. And most of his confirmation comes from extra-biblical literature. We find him in the writings of Josephus, the Jewish historian, and Tertullian, the early church father, Eusebius in the 4th century, and then you have Philo, the Jewish philosopher who is familiar with Greek philosophy. Tacitus, the Roman historian, writes about Pilate. And then you have Agapaeus of Hierapolis that writes about him as well. So we have extra biblical literature to confirm him. And we also even, Brian, we found a stone with an inscription with his name on it. And then we finally get to Caiaphas, who is the high priest the year that Christ was crucified. He was the individual that instigated Christ's trial. They wanted to frame him for blasphemy, and ultimately they wanted a death penalty given to Jesus, but he had to go to Pilate in order to secure the death penalty because Caiaphas didn't have that death penalty power at that time. And remember, Caiaphas was the son-in-law of Annas, who retained his title as high priest during this time period. Annas was like the puppet manipulator behind the scenes. He was pulling the strings and moving the levers for Caiaphas, so to speak. And then, you know, Caiaphas eventually, after Christ's ministry had passed and Christ had been crucified, a few years later, the same year that Pilate was removed from office, about 36 or 37 AD, Caiaphas was removed from office as well. And we have all kinds of confirmation of the high priest Caiaphas. Josephus talks about him, and we've also discovered a family tomb with bone box ossuaries with his name on it. So all three of these individuals featured prominently. They're important figures because they have so much authority and power, and they figured prominently in the life of Jesus.
That's a great overview. Thanks for that, Joe. And let's, Pat, move to the second D, the description. You know, Joe just mentioned a coin. He mentioned family tombs. He mentioned Herod with many of the building. So maybe describe for us, Pat, some of these features and what it is that was discovered by the archaeologist, giving us a little bit more detail on what Joe just provided.
Yeah, you know, Joe gave a great background on these three, maybe the unholy trinity here. But King Herod, you know, let's start with him. I mean, Herod the Great, a lot of people just know him as the guy that tried to kill Jesus and slaughtered the children in Bethlehem. But he was one of the great architects and engineers of his time. I mean, he left a huge archaeological footprints all over Israel and Jordan. Herod the Great directed over, we think, 30 major large-scale construction projects across Judea and the Roman world during his reign. As Joe mentioned, about 13 major fortress palaces, you know, and his work on the Temple Mount, the cities of Sebaste and Caesarea, aqueducts, theaters, stadiums, forts, towers. I mean, you know, most ancient kings build one main palace and maybe a fortress or two, but Herod built an entire network of palaces and fortresses and construction projects all over Israel and Palestine and parts of the Roman world. So it's one of the reasons that scholars and archaeologists call him one of the greatest builders in Jewish history. So we can't go through all of his works, but Joe mentioned some. One of his most famous that people don't visit when they go to Israel is the Herodium. It's a huge palace fortress, which became his mausoleum as well. You know, it's near Bethlehem. It's a cone-shaped man-made mountain, a fortress palace, an artificial mountain he made nearly 200 feet tall, really impressive. And when you walk to the top, you can see the Judean hill country and Bethlehem below. There were palatial structures on the hilltop, a tower. But Josephus records that Herod was buried here at the Herodium. And in 2007, Ehud Netzer, whom Joe mentioned, believed he found Herod's tomb. There was a grand processional stairway leading to the tomb. We think we have discovered the mausoleum structure there and Herod's sarcophagus. It was a large, ornate sarcophagus smashed into pieces, probably by the, you know, during the Jewish rebellion. Herod was not liked by the Jews, so it's not surprising that they would smash his sarcophagus, you know, and it was an ornate sarcophagus there, a Roman sarcophagus, not a Jewish ossuary, as we discussed last time, because Herod wanted to be buried as a Roman. So you have the Herodium, you have the great palace up there on the mountain, but there's a lower palace, a lower section to it, built on the western and southern slopes there. Multi-level terraces with retaining walls, rooms arranged around a courtyard, beautiful reception halls and private chambers, bathhouses, pools, and water channels there. And Herod created a sophisticated water system there. I mean, if you go out there, you know how hard, difficult it is to have water and an irrigation system. And so to put all that together really is an engineering feat here. So you have the Herodium, you've got the Temple Mount expansion. Herod massively rebuilt that second temple complex. He doubled the size of the Temple Mount, putting these huge retaining walls that you see there, enormous retaining walls there, especially along the western and southern wall. The southern side, you know, he really expanded that to that huge courtyard you see there today. And the southern wall stands about 100 feet above ground. He really raised it up. So it's a tremendous feat of engineering there. The foundation stones you can see today, some over 500 tons. So just amazing what he did there. And then you have the famous city of Caesarea Maritima that Joe talked about. And this is a city Herod built from scratch. And one of the amazing parts of this city, the Sebastos Harbor there, that's an artificial harbor. It's another great engineering wonder and one of the most deepest harbors of the ancient world. The harbor depth is about 20 to 25 feet deep, which, you know, back in the first century, that's extremely deep for a man-made harbor. And we found the underwater pillars there, or the foundation blocks. They're about 15 to 20 feet tall and about 40 to 50 feet long, weighing several hundred tons that he used to build his harbor there. And of course, at Caesarea Maritima, you have the Hippodrome where they did the chariot races, the theater and amphitheater. And, you know, Brian, you'd appreciate the amphitheater. It could seat about 2,000 people. And there's no microphone there. The acoustics are incredible. You can talk on the stage like I'm talking to you now, and the guy in the top row can hear me. It's incredible. Beautiful palace built into the sea. And then, as Joe mentioned, another fortress palace of Masada. I mean, it's known for the Jewish revolt there where the Jews held out, but it's a tremendous, right there near the Dead Sea, how he was able to get water up there, and all of that is just amazing because there's Roman-style bathhouses. On the northern side, there's a three-tiered luxury palace. It's just amazing what he built up there. So those are some of his famous fortresses out there. He had a Jerusalem palace. He had a Jericho winter palaces with swimming pools and gardens and aqueducts. Macharis, you know, that's on the eastern side of the Dead Sea. Mark 6, Matthew 14, that's where John the Baptist was later held and executed there. So it served as a military stronghold. And so Herod definitely left his architectural footprint there in Israel and in the Roman Empire. And Pontius Pilate, as Joe mentioned, you know, we found the famous Pilate stone or the plaque there at Caesarea Maritima there. And it reads there in Latin, Pontius Pilate, prefect of Judea there. And recently, in about 2018, we found a copper alloy ring of Pontius Pilate at the Herodium. There, with the laser technology we have now, we were able to decipher it, and it's got the name of Pontius Pilate. Either was his ring or used by one of his officials as an official seal ring there. And then we discovered the ossuary of Caiaphas. It's one of the most famous finds discovered in a burial cave in Jerusalem, and was an ornate, highly decorated limestone bone box, and on it said Joseph, son of Caiaphas. And we even found the remains of bones there of a man about 60 years old. So it's consistent with Caiaphas, the man who oversaw Jesus' trial there. And so these are some amazing discoveries of some of the key figures there in the Gospels.
Herod, you know, the builder, and that is one aspect we do neglect when we're reading the Bible, but he was kind of like the contractor of his day. He had a huge labor yeah. force and obviously an architectural team that were able to implement his vision for that area. So just fascinating elements, and left so much for modern archaeologists to go back and study that first century period, particularly as it relates to Jesus. Speaking of which, Joe, you know, you began by kind of giving us the historical background of Herod and Pontius Pilate and Caiaphas. Let's move now to the third D, the dwelling, and where these guys are found in the Bible. So we have the history. Let's now turn to the Bible. Where are they discussed in the Gospels? And, you know, as you've already pointed out, they're kind of like the axis of evil, this unholy trinity. But give us a little bit more about their biblical presence.
Well, Brian, we first see Herod the Great in Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. We notice that he is very troubled about news of Jesus's birth. A Messiah was going to come into the world, a new king of the Jews, and this directly threatened his power as people called him the king of the Jews. So what he did was he sent his guards over to Bethlehem to kill all the babies 2 years old or younger. And he was that first instigator of trying to eliminate Jesus and his ministry, to stifle any type of new king coming into the world. And remember, Herod the Great is different from his son, Herod Antipas, that was featured at Jesus's trial. You see, Herod Antipas is in Mark chapter 6, and he ruled the Galilee region, the Perea region, which was east of the Jordan River as well. He's the one who executed John the Baptist at Herod the Great's, his father's fortress there on the east side of the Dead Sea in modern-day Jordan today. He also thought that Jesus was John the Baptist raised from the dead, perhaps. So Herod Antipas was a very paranoid individual. He was not a nice person. He wanted to stifle out anybody who would challenge his authority. And this Herod Antipas, the son of Herod the Great, in Luke 13, Jesus calls him that fox, you know, which indicated some sort of prior interaction or relationship or knowledge of Herod Antipas, how he was clever and cunning and so forth. So Herod the Great, Matthew chapter 2, he attempted to kill Jesus as an infant to stifle God's plan of redemption there early. Of course, it's satanically energized. But then you have Pontius Pilate. All four Gospels mention Pontius Pilate and his interaction with Jesus, and it's particularly focused in John chapter 18 and 19, and that's the trial of Jesus, and that's where we see Pilate officiating this trial, trying to please the Jewish religious authorities and so forth. And Pilate, asks Jesus and makes questions and statements. Remember in John 18:38, it says, "What is truth?" Pilate was giving this question probably as a tongue-in-cheek, satirical, rhetorical question because of the whole dynamics that were at play at Jesus's trial. And then he talked about presenting Jesus, and he said, "Behold the man," you know, in Latin, "Ecce homo." 19 chapter, verse 5, Pilate says, "Hey, behold this guy. I mean, I've whipped him, I've punished him, I've chastised him. Why don't you just release him?" So Pilate was trying to get rid of this responsibility, and in the end, he would try to wash his hands of the event in Matthew 27. And you can see this in Mark and Luke's Gospels as well. And then going on from Herod the Great and Pontius Pilate, you have Caiaphas, the high priest, who was the primary religious opponent of Jesus. You see him primarily in John chapter 11 in verses 48 to 50. And you remember his statement, you know, "If we let this Jesus go on like this, all men will believe in him and they'll follow Jesus, and then the Romans will come and take both our place and nation." And then he talks about it's expedient for you that one man should die for the people and that the whole nation should not perish. So he unwittingly prophesies what Jesus came to do, to die for the sins of the world and to save a nation. He didn't know what he was saying and the significance, of course, but Caiaphas was in this prominent role of instigating and entrapping Jesus, whether it's through theology or through blasphemy or through breaking Roman law by calling himself a king and so forth. And we see that Jesus was taken to Caiaphas's house where the Sanhedrin gathered. It was probably a compound where Annas lived as well. And they brought false witnesses against Jesus. And this is all at the instigation of the high priest Caiaphas. And Caiaphas was also the one who asked Jesus directly if he was the Son of God. And Jesus, of course, affirms that he is the Son of God. And then Jesus goes on to tell him that he will sit at God's right hand and come in the clouds of heaven. And Caiaphas tears his robe and throws dirt in the air and is just, you know, broken apart by Jesus's claims here. And then ultimately, it's Caiaphas who leads the council that condemns Jesus ultimately to death. So Herod the Great, Pontius Pilate, Caiaphas, all three men have great authority. They feature prominently. And these are the people who really formed that tripart progression to get Jesus condemned and ultimately crucified.
Great, great biblical overview. So Pat, Joe has provided now a historical overview, kind of giving us the footprint these three men had in history. And now he just gave us the biblical footprint, if you will. And of course, they were very important, not only from the biblical narrative, but a historical narrative. So this leads us to our fourth denotation. Why is this significant that the Bible and history are in agreement and that archaeology is really demonstrating that the Bible is historically reliable?
Yeah, Brian. You know, if the Gospels are historically reliable, I mean, you don't even have to believe in inerrancy or the divine inspiration of the Bible. But I mean, if the Bible is historically reliable, then it gives us a trustworthy testimony, a historical record of the life of Christ, you know, who claimed to be the divine Son of God and confirmed his claim to his miraculous life and resurrection from the dead.
Once again, we've run out of time. Thank you for joining us here on Evidence and Answers. Our goal is to bring you the love of Christ and to equip you in your faith to always be ready to give a response. If you would like to hold an apologetics conference or series of teachings at your facility, contact Pat by calling him in Hawaii. That number is 483-0586, or you may email him through the Evidence and Answers website. That's evidenceandanswers.org. Be sure to browse through our listing of topics on our site. We have everything from atheism to Zen Buddhism. You will also find articles and additional audio for you to listen to or download. An additional location to find Pat's messages is on YouTube. Look up Evidence and Answers and hit the subscribe button. To keep quality broadcasts like Pat's on the air, we rely on generous financial support from you, our listeners. Donating is simple. Just log on at evidenceandanswers.org. Evidence and Answers is grateful for one of our sponsors, the Honolulu Christian Church. If you don't have a home church and are looking for a place to grow in your faith, check out the Honolulu Christian Church. For service times, log in at honoluluchristian.org. Join us again next time on the air or online as we provide compelling reasons for faith in Christ. That's Evidence and Answers with Pat Zukeran.